The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody, on this April 26th, 2024. Glad you are here. Former state senator and current conservative icon Don Huffines joins us 8:35. Can't wait. 1 hour from now, Terry Teat and her brother Patrick Hayes. Who are they? We've known Terry for years, and they're just awesome. She's great. She and her husband moved from here, from the Metroplex, up to New Hampshire, where she has been an intrepid correspondent in the snows for us in various New Hampshire primaries. And her brother is just a longtime listener, and they're longtime friends of the show, and they sprang for the Food for the Poor co-host opportunity. And so we're going to talk about the country, probably talk some culture, maybe a couple of tunes, and the 9 o'clock hour will be appropriately festive. Looking forward to that and getting into the weekend in that way. But I am not actually fully and totally getting into the weekend at the close of today's show, as I usually do. It's a 2-2-2 show day, not Prager. That's probably my usual haunt. I'm doing me a little Gorka today, filling in for Dr. Gorka. And so 4 to 6, I got you on the way in, got you on the way home. So I'll look for you on the America First with Dr. Gorka gig 4 to 6 today. Oh, and by the way, and what is today? Oh, yeah, it's Friday.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good.
I feel good. I got you.
I know, I had the same question. Mark, what are you doing two shows on a Friday for? Jeez. But let's focus. Got one for the 80s kids. Why? Because it's Sheena Easton's birthday. I know we could have done 9 to 5 morning train. You Got the Look for Your Eyes Only. Very uncomfortably titled Sugar Walls. What even was that? Let's go 1984 and a little strut. How old is Sheena Easton? 65. Let's let her get to the hook, shall we? A fine Scottish lass. All righty. 866-660-5759. You and me to the bottom of the hour. Don Huffines, 8:35. We'll talk some Texas political stuff. And looking forward to the weekend and whatever. I kind of hope let's get a Mavericks win, go one up on the Clippers. Let's get an actual Stars win so they don't get swept. That would be good too. Cowboys draft, lovely. We got a lineman out of Oklahoma. Great, we need a lineman. Everybody, the obsessions about the draft coverage. Listen, we all dork out on something, right? And so we all have our thing. And for a lot of folks, it's like who the third round pick of the Jets is versus the Raiders trading up for, it's like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And I think the reason my NFL draft interest is mitigated is because so often really, really high picks are a complete bust. And sometimes you win Super Bowls with people who you pick in the third round or come close to winning Super Bowls with the guy who's the last pick in the draft, the Mr. Irrelevant experience of the San Francisco 49ers. So, I mean, I don't know. I want the Cowboys to do well. That's great. I always want the Cowboys to do well. We have been long denied. So my level of excitement, it's kind of funny. You're asking me to get excited about the draft. I can't even get excited about the regular season. You know, we can open 11-0. It's like, okay, great. Because the story of I was going to say Cowboys under Jerry, but that's not totally true. He won us three Super Bowls. I hope you like those three Super Bowls. I hope you like them very much. And yeah, I did. And that's been forever. And since then, just either mediocrity or choking in the playoffs. So I will be here's what the Cowboys need to get this monkey off their back. And I'm going to really want to be fair. Don't need to win a Super Bowl. That'd be nice. I don't even think you need to get to the Super Bowl, which would be nice. Yeah, I think it would be widely embraced as progress if your Dallas Cowboys get to the NFC Championship game. So if we have a Cowboys, Niners, Cowboys, Eagles, Cowboys, whoever, in the NFC Championship game, it'll be like, okay, all right, maybe. And by the way, that would be good for Dak as well before they open up and throw him squillions of dollars, which he may or may not deserve. I don't know. I don't even know. Everybody says, fire Dak, fire McCarthy after this past week. I understand the frustration. I felt the frustration. I gave voice to the frustration. But the streets are not exactly teeming with top 10 quarterbacks and top 10 coaches. You know, so I still want to go get Bill Cowher. You know, get him, yank him off that TV set and put him on the sideline. Anyway, so that's what's up. That's what's up in the world of sport. And now the sport of kings, the world of politics, and the world and listen, it is politics that's driving the chaos on college campuses. I know that it is people can have passionate and ardent and hot takes on the Israelis and the Palestinians. Totally get that. It is possible for people to want a Palestinian homeland and not embrace terrorism on the path to that. Unfortunately, everybody making the news these days on college campuses or in the halls of Congress are engaged in rampant Jew hating, seething anti-Semitism. And sometimes it is couched in things that sound reasonable. If you call for a ceasefire right now in the Israel-Hamas war, that is a pro-Hamas position because they are losing. Israel is exacting a righteous toll on the people who attacked Israel wantonly, viciously, grotesquely on October 7th. So they are now in the process of saying, all right, we are going to eradicate the people who did this to us. So if you step up and go, bop, ceasefire. What? Why? And then you get to the whole notion of free Palestine. From what? From what? Palestinians live in peace and productivity in Israel. But they want a country called Palestine. Oh, okay. The so-called two-state solution. We're a million miles from being able to talk about that. As long as the Palestinian leadership is soaked with the blood of terror, as it was under Yasser Arafat, as it is under Mahmoud Abbas, as it is when guided through the terrorist lens of Hamas, as it is when influenced by the Jew-hating mullahs of Iran. So, guys, you got a lot of house cleaning to do in Palestinian leadership. Before we can even remotely, and by the way, we have a Palestinian homeland. It's called Jordan. I'm not going with that. And I guess they want, the country with that name on it. Well, good luck with that. So meanwhile, this all plays out on college campuses, and that makes it an American story. Boy, how are you feeling about, paying $70,000 for that Ivy League education now? Oh, and the absolute sweetest irony of all is a lot of these hooligans want you and me to pay off their college loans so that they can engage in this kind of activity. CBS, Jason Allen with a little summary of yesterday's action.
Let them go! Campus crackdown at Atlanta's Emory University. Police tore down tents, and some appear to be tased by police.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to tase anybody. Doesn't need to be tased. But if you need to be tased, you need to be tased. And let's talk a little bit about tents. As soon as you hear about a tent or an encampment or we're going to take back our university, again, from whom exactly? the political demand is for all these universities to stop investing in companies tied to either Israel or America's supplying of money and materiel to our allies in Israel. They want universities to stop doing that. Why? Because they're pro-Hamas. They don't want Israel to prevail in their war on the people who attacked them. It is a pro-Hamas position they take. The universities, one presumes, are not going to do that. And so there's the standoff. And a lot of these students who clearly have an enormous amount of time on their hands are saying, all right, we're going to go camping. Hey, camping is great at a Texas lake. Camping is great at Broken Bow. Camping is great in the Canadian Rockies. Camping on a university campus? That's a no. They ought to drag every single one of these people out of those stupid tents and throw them off campus. A tent city is squalor. It is a hazard. It is disruptive. And that's what University of Texas knew was coming. They knew this was coming. You give these people an inch and they will take a mile. And so the dean of students said, no, your event is canceled. And the university president, Jay Hartzell, as night fell, said, we did the right thing. Which means, oh, by the way, let me finish this and then I'll show you what the faculty council at UT said. Just be careful where you send your kids. Be careful where you send your kids.
Some students and faculty were led away in handcuffs. Here at the University of Texas, Austin, dueling protests. Pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli protesters facing off on campus with security watching.
It is my understanding that University of Texas at Austin funds research that Israel directly benefits from.
Yep. Yes, they do. And your point?
The campus of USC. The LAPD used their batons to disperse a large crowd of protesters late last night.
All right, let's talk about escalation. Oh, the police escalated. Well, no, the police are a deterrent. The police showed up at UT, the police showed up at USC as an obvious message that says, we're not going to have any jackwagonry here. Not here, not now. If the people who are interested in hooligan behavior then are triggered by that, it is they who escalated, not the mere arrival of police.
School canceling the main stage commencement ceremony. CBS's Nancy Chen is at Columbia University.
Dozens of tents remain here at Columbia University. Right outside it, Israeli flags. And some Jewish students we spoke to say they feel scared to be on campus.
As well they
Many
should.
Many of us knew people or the music festival or that live nearby. I'm sorry, I'm getting very emotional about that. And adding to that, the situation where people scream hateful speech who have harassed and attacked both verbally and physically people.
And sometimes they do us the favor of making TikTok videos or Instagram videos where they're out there saying, I'm going to kill Zionists. Really? Yes, really. So here's another really. And again, Austin is a political swamp. UT is a political minefield. But I gave the university all kinds of credit for doing the right thing, for clamping down on what could have been a deeply, seriously troubling and obstructive and improper Columbia-style situation. So here's the here are the people who teach your children, if your dollars are going to UT. The UT Faculty Council. Dear colleagues, like many of you, we are gravely alarmed by yesterday's events, including President Hartzell's decision to invite DPS officers armed and in riot gear onto the 40 acres to disrupt a nonviolent protest. If you say we're going to take back the university, and if you say we our comrades at Columbia are invoked as heroes, and then the university says your event is canceled, people gathering in violation of that, that's not peaceful. We are writing to you this morning to let you know that we've been in touch with President Hartzell. We've expressed our serious concerns with the university's decision to escalate. And so here's just the faculty council. We hope the university will look back on its behavior as an overreaction. Nope. it was exactly the right reaction. 824. All righty, 829, 866, 660, 5759. Speaking of Texas. Little Stevie Ray Vaughan, Pride and Joy. Going into the news, quick visit in San Antonio. Dodd, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hi, great.
Hey, I just had two quick things. Mm-hmm. One is a phrase that I've kind of invented on my own, but in several situations I've applied it that Will Rogers and Voltaire never met an anti-Israeli protester.
I never met a man I didn't like. Very good.
And then the other thing is, I heard this phrase off and on for a long time. It says, essentially, applying to our rights, that someone's rights ends where they, infringe or impinge.
Right. My right to swing my arm ends at your face. In other words, I could do whatever I want as long as it has an adverse effect on you. Exactly right.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Of course it does. And I guess in terms of the campus protests, someone's right to express their views, no matter what those views might be, are fine. But as soon as you disrupt campus decorum, as soon as you threaten people with violence, as soon as you take actual assaultive action toward them, that's where your rights end. Absolutely, that fits. All right, here's what fits right now. A newscast and then a visit with Don Huffine. Stick around. I'm Mark Davis. Here is Nikki Whaley. All right, 8:37. It is a Friday, and we are glad you are here, and we are glad this gentleman is here. We're always glad when this gentleman is here. He and his family have been involved in both a business and political way that have been of such enormous benefit. They're just jewels in the crown of North Texas, and it's just great to say hi to my good friend Don Huffines. Welcome, Don. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, Mark. I am fantastic. Thank you very much. I just love being on your show. You are the best talk radio show host in the country.
You're quite by definition too kind, and thank you very much for your graciousness. So the thing that I wanted to bring you on to talk about, and that we've always enjoyed talking over the years when you were state senator, before then, since then, and when you ran for governor, and just all kinds of things to talk about with you, is I want to put your thumb on the pulse of right now. With the runoffs a month and 2 days away, what's the message? What happened on Super Tuesday, and what is the completion of that message going to look like on May 28th?
Well, I really feel like this is a wave election for actual Republicans in the state house. We don't have, obviously, many statewide, really, no statewide candidates on the ballot. But I haven't seen this many true, actual Republican conservatives win in the state house ever. And it's a real wave, and it's going to change the perspective of Texas, because all the real Republican legislation, our priorities, our party platform priorities have all been killed in the House for decades. As Republicans have controlled everything in Austin for over 20 years, we seldom get our initiatives, our legislative priorities passed because of the state House. But that is going to change going forward. We got a ton of conservatives that have won.
We do. I mean, some of it already, you've got your Mitch Little victory that has already happened. You have your Shelley Luther victory that has already happened. Others may lie ahead on the short horizon there on May 28th. Is Dade Phelan going to lose in his own district?
Well, this is unprecedented when a sitting speaker of the House is in runoff. And any incumbent that's in a runoff has about a 70% chance of losing. My prediction, he's going to lose. I've endorsed Dave Covey. I think he's going to win. I mean, Phelan only got 43% on Super Tuesday. And even if he pulls this out, and he's got millions and millions of dollars, of course, to outspend Covey, I don't think he holds the speaker's position. There's already other candidates announced to run against him for speaker, and it's going to be a new day in the Texas House. And Dan Patrick, he's endorsed Covey, And he's going to get his legislation done from the Senate, finally.
I have spoken on a couple of occasions to Dr. Tom Oliverson, state rep from down there northwest of Houston, and I can't find anything that's not awesome about him. Do you think there'll be competition? What do you think of Dr. Tom? And will there be competition? And will this be a busy race? Or is he trying to get in early and stake that claim?
Usually the person in early doesn't win. So I think he's a good candidate, but I'm sure there'll be other candidates.
Anybody that you would look for, or anybody that you would particularly advocate, or just want to kind of wait for that field to congeal?
I'd like to see who's in the field, but I'm always for the most conservative members and the ones that really believe in our party platform and really believe in liberty. And look, the winds of liberty are blowing hard, Mark. They really are. And Abbott tacked, after my race against him, he tacked really hard to the right. He understood what was happening, and it was a brilliant move on his part.
That's the next thing I wanted to ask you about, is it seems like, I said this yesterday, that it's not just Abbott, but some other folks are just sort of leaning into your campaign manual, and they're discovering how much people love them. And it's not even about personalities. It's if you find yourself in a fit of squishy moderation, and you're in the Republican Party in Texas today, lean into your conservatism, and people will love you. Lean away from it, and people will not love you, and you might find out the hard way at the ballot box.
That's exactly what happened. Many incumbents were knocked out, and you're going to see in the Super Tuesday, and you're going to see them losing the runoff. And that's exactly right. And I've been saying that, and so for years, the mushy middle is where you're going to get beat. And because we don't have that, you don't bring any solutions to the table. And I just ask everybody, are their property taxes going down? How do you like that appraisal that just came out for everybody?
All right, mentioned...
Don't forget, Mark, we had the quote, the biggest property tax cut in Texas history, which, of course, was a lie. But I can tell you, if you're paying less property taxes this year, just wait till next year.
Gotcha. So property taxes have been a big deal for you for a long time, and it led to a fascinating conversation yesterday that I want to tell you about. And listen, we talk all the time, but it led to the direct idea of let's have Don on today. So I'm talking to a guy, and we're talking about the SD30 race, where Brent Hagenboom, who seems to have a ton of money and a ton of endorsements, including yours, is up against Jace Yarbrough. Good guy, up-and-comer, may have a future. It may not involve winning here. But I don't know. You never can tell. That's why we have elections. So folks were calling, and some of Jace's fans have been nitpicking about some stuff about Brent, about, you know, whether they didn't like how he was Denton County chair, or the residency thing, which nobody cares about, that, you know, that doesn't like him. Or the only people they care about are those that don't like him. So I asked these folks, I said, give me a real policy difference. Give me something that genuinely, literally might be a difference between these guys. And I had a caller mention property taxes, where his perception is that Brent is kind of a let's reduce them in real ways. And Jace Yarbrough seemed to be a let's get rid of them kind of guy. And that sounded more like you. And this particular caller said, in view of that, why'd you endorse Brent?
Well, I interviewed, of course, both candidates, and initially was for Jace. And then I interviewed Brent a few weeks later, and I really fell in love with his policies and what he stands for. This guy is a businessman. He's in his 60s, Brent is. He's not looking for a new career, and his heart is in the place to solve the issues that affect Texas. And I talked to him about property tax. I talked to him about our conservative priorities, what we want to get done, and he was aligned on all of that. And a lot of people, let me just get this clear to you, is that a lot of people don't understand that we can really eliminate the M&O tax, that's the school tax, without adding a tax or increasing a tax and keeping schools fully funded. It's a little complicated, but once I explain it, it's really about fiscal discipline, then people get it. And maybe Brent hadn't really studied my white papers and things like that on it. But once people understand it, they're usually all on board and they're happy to support it.
So a couple of things seem to be the answer to that question. You are convinced that Brent, once in office, would be at least amenable to a Don Huffine-style aggression on property tax removal. And then throw in the fact that, like, everybody seems to just love the guy. I mean, you got your Dan Patrick endorsement. You got, you know, various others. It just seems like the wind is blowing his way.
It does, and it is. And he's got all the endorsements, and I think he'll definitely be on board on eliminating the M&O tax.
What? I ask
the
people
the school tax.
I ask people this. I really do. It sounds like I'm picking on the guy, and I'm not, but I'm curious because I've had a lot to. What the heck happened? What broke Drew Springer?
I really don't know, Mark. I wasn't involved in that. I don't know.
No, I mean, and because the book on Drew, it's true of many in the Paxton impeachment camp, you know, in the House, you know, there'll be doctoral dissertations about what made so many Republicans decide that was a great idea. Maybe fealty to Dade Phelan wasn't such a great idea. There were senators. You got your Kelly Hancock, who was on board for the Paxton conviction. And then Drew, who was not, but then later on surfaces and says, let's impeach him again. It is just a fit of Paxton hatred that I just can't fathom. Let's come away from individual names and personalities. Let me just ask you, as that sort of works its way into the tapestry of Texas history, Paxton stands vindicated. He reached the settlement, which is not a plea bargain in any way, shape, or form, where this is all behind him. He will not be running from prison as John Cornyn taunted him about. So what's the lesson in this from the whole Ken Paxton drama, and what's his future look like?
I think Ken Paxton's future looks very good. I think right now he's really probing the waters, the political waters, to see if he can beat John Cornyn for the U.S. Senate. And I suspect and I predict that he will be running against Cornyn in the primaries coming up for that seat. And I imagine he's polled it and he's looking pretty good there.
I think he is, too. It's easy for us to look through the lens of right now, where every time, I mean, Cornyn's been around forever, and a lot of conservatives have been kind of annoyed by him at times, most recently some Second Amendment softness. But I've said, look, Cornyn has been just conservative enough for a wide swath of Texans that he's pretty unbeatable in the primaries, and that's been true year in and year out. There's something different about now, though, as we're learning in the landscape that you and I are talking about. 2 years from now, though, if Cornyn is Senate Majority Leader, where we actually have the majority, he is Mitch McConnell's successor, which he's running to be, and we have a majority. Trump made Cornyn better. And if he does that again, he might not be as beatable as Ken and others might think right now. What do you think?
Well, that's certainly true. You're absolutely correct. I don't know if Cornyn can win Senate Majority Leader. There's going to be four or five good candidates in D.C. running for that position. But say he does, then I think you're right. It's going to be harder for Paxton to beat him. But then you got to feel like, you know, where's everybody going to move up the food chain, the org chart?
Where do all these chess pieces go? Do you think Paxton does he have the slightest interest in being governor?
I think everybody if any brains would love to be governor more than likely. I mean, you're going to have a lot of people want to be governor. It's one of the top five positions in the country. As far as what could happen if you wielded the office correctly. But, yeah, I'm sure he would. But, you know, Abbott's, you know, we don't have term limits. I mean, Abbott could be governor for another 50 years. So, and it's so hard to beat an incumbent. It's almost impossible.
Well, it is. And especially, and Abbott, as we said at the beginning of our conversation, let's come full circle. All he has done is bolster a lot of conservative concerns. But especially on the border. I mean, the Abbott of today is just a better governor than the Abbott of 3-4 years ago.
Oh, totally. 100% agree with that one. And he could do a lot more on the border, but that's not his nature to really press the federal government. He's never going to he's always going to obey what the courts say to do, no matter what they say and how liberal the judges are, the federal judges. He doesn't really take into consideration how serious this situation is, I think. But anyway, besides that, He's tacked hard to the right.
Yeah.
He knew where the winds were blowing, and he's doing a better job. Cornyn has not. Cornyn's almost embraced the middle more than ever, so I think he's more vulnerable.
It is always a pleasure to be in the company of Don Huffines on the old X Twitter, at Don Huffines. Huffines, that wonderful Huffines Liberty organization. Just check out everything that they're up to, and it's always a pleasure to have you on, Don. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
Don Huffines. Don Huffines, I will. It is 8:50. So this album comes out the Christmas after I graduate from high school. December of 75, the great Gary Wright, the Dreamweaver album. This is Love Is Alive. Gary no longer is, however. Passed away last year. Would have been 81 today. Great album. It's one guy playing mostly one instrument. It's like Gary and some keyboards. There's like Ronnie Montrose on guitar on Power of Love. And he got drumming, of course, but that's about it. He made the most of it. Alrighty, we are going to make the most of the company of some friends of mine. This is just a wonderful lady and her wonderful brother. Terry Teat and her husband used to live in the Metroplex, but then they moved to New Hampshire. But hey, in the modern day, you can leave town and take us with you. So they have remained listeners, as has her brother. And they plunked down the Food for the Poor fee to do some co-hosting. So we're going to sling hot topics and thoughts and just Friday festivities to wrap up the weekend style. So let me go get them while you listen to some news. And we start the 9 o'clock hour here on 660 AM The Answer.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.